it's a privilege to be here this morning. I think this worthy institution has a tradition and goes back many decades, not sure how many, and wherever you go around the world, you meet proud products of the work that you people and your predecessors have been doing, and certainly Hashem should help you that you should be able to continue your wonderful work. It's hard in a short period of time to try to touch on what maybe are the most significant elements of chinuch, of an education that we want to give our students. But I think the first concept that has to be first and foremost in our thinking is the definition of chinuch. Rashi says on the posuk vayorek es chanichov, that's the lotion of chinuch, that chinuch refers to tchilas knisas odom, or keli, something else too, ledovor sheosid leumnes, sheosid lamuid. It's the beginning of the entry of someone, a student could be, to that which they are going to continue to remain with forevermore for the rest of their lives. And I think the focus in chinuch has to be very clear. Two elements. Number one, this is just the beginning. And it's really just the beginning, tchilas knisas. It's the beginning of the entry. It's the foundation. This that we're giving them in the younger grades, it's certainly that. Even in the older grades, it's the foundation for more that's coming later. With the eye on, sheyochol sheosid lamud bo, that they're going to continue. If we achieve temporary goals without the lasting effect, then we have not really performed the avodas hachinuch, what chinuch is really all about. And that has to be our view. We're looking for long-term effect. We're looking to win the war, not just the battles and the skirmishes. And I think this is really very, very critical. It's especially critical today in a world where we are faced with a very tragic phenomenon. People used to deny that kids are going off the derech. There's no longer any denial about that. Those are quite obvious. There's kim'at she'ein bayis asher ein shomeis, and forgive me, it's almost literal. But today we have a new phenomenon. We have our 20-somes, 30-somes, 40-somes, married, children. Everything seems so perfect and beautiful on the outside. Either in the inside they've rejected it all, or they're on the verge of just saying goodbye and running away and just leaving the Yiddishkeit, leaving everything that seemed to have meant so much to them until this point. And therefore, excuse me, it's all the more critical that we implant in that tchilas knisas something, elements, ingredients, that should hopefully more assure that they will be, in fact, yuchlu lamod behem. And I'd like to suggest, first and foremost, one ingredient. It's an interesting ingredient. It's one everybody knows about. It's a household word which seems so elusive. And the word is happiness. In fact, it's very strange. We live in a very, very confusing world. More money is being spent today on the pursuit of happiness than anything else in the world. Books and seminars and research and who knows what. Everyone talking about it, trying, working, this, pills, you know, therapy, anything, all just to be happy. That's all we want. Nobody wants anything more than being happy. No one wants to be rich and miserable. No one wants to be famous and miserable. We all want to be happy. And yet, with such an impassioned pursuit of happiness in a society, Society seems to be such an unhappy place. If you judge by the rates, suicide rates, alcohol, drug abuse rates, divorce rates, rates that mental health professionals can charge. If you judge by the rates, we're in trouble. We're not a happy place. Definitely not a very happy place. So here you have a society passionately pursuing happiness and seems to be so miserable. What in the world is going on? And I thought, and I think I have the solution. Well, I misspoke. I think I understand it. And let's see if we can have the solution. It's very simple. If you don't know what you're looking for, you're not going to find it. You can trip all over it and not even realize that you found it. Because I don't know what it is. What is happiness? Not only that. Not only do we not know, but our society has taught us a false definition of happiness. If I had a board here, I would write, happiness equals pleasure. True or false? Afraid to answer that question. False. Absolutely. Nothing can be further from the truth. And not only that, if we will have a true definition of happiness, we'll see that it's not only false, that pleasure is antithetical to happiness. And let's try to explain why. We're very fortunate. And hopefully you're going to be sharing this good fortune with your students. The world struggles to understand what's going on. Science started ground zero, not in Manhattan, but ground zero, and works their way up, trying to figure out what's the world all about, what's the human being all about, what's the body all about, what's the mind all about, this science, that science, what's the universe all about, and the cosmos all about. And we go the other way. The blueprint for creation, that which upon which the creation itself and everything in it is based, is ours, was given to us at Har Sinai. HaKadosh Baruch Hu histakel b'oiraiso uboro alma. Hashem looked into the Torah, Chazal tell us, and he created the world. The world exists according to this blueprint. And in the blueprint lies all of the secrets of creation. Just as in the blueprint of this building, you will discover where the support beams are, where the plumbing is, and where the electrical is, and so forth and so on. So we have the blueprint. We were privileged with receiving that blueprint. Now, the blueprint has something very unique about it. It has a language. The language of the blueprint is different from every other language in the world. Loshon HaKodesh, not necessarily modern Hebrew, which is taken from it, but Loshon HaKodesh is unique amongst all the languages. In every language, words are decided by convention. This is a chair because people agree to call it such. That's a table because people agree to call it such. That's a flag because it's agreed to call it such. It's an agreement. It's a convention. It doesn't mean if there's nothing flaggy about that or chairy about that or tabley about that. Not so Loshon HaKodesh. In Loshon HaKodesh, we know that the three-letter sheresh of the word, the three-letter root, tells us the essence of the meaning of that word. And every time you'll find that three-letter root in a word, it's always implanting that meaning in that word. There's complex combinations of meanings and words and complex concepts, but that three-letter root has a meaning. And every time it's used, we know that's the meaning. Happiness. What's happiness? Well, David HaMelech told us something very interesting. We recite it now in Elul twice a day. Achas shoalti me'eis Hashem oiso avakesh. Shifti be'beis Hashem kol yimei chayai. David HaMelech had one request. He wanted to sit in the house of God. Lovakir be'hecholoi. What did David HaMelech tell us about that one request? Ashrei yoishvei be'secho. One who sits in God's house is very happy. That's very fortunate. Osher. Osher seems to be maybe the highest form of happiness. It's the expression of the fulfillment of David HaMelech's one and only dream. The sheresh of the word Osher. Agav, I might as well just share with you a little personal note. Many years ago, when I went to Israel on a date, subsequently we married, we had a very interesting experience. This young lady spoke only Hebrew, I spoke only English, and we got along great. Then we start to communicate a little bit in Mela. Anyway, so maybe the second date I asked her, I said, what do you want out of life? And she says to me, Ani rotza liot me'usheret. I thought she wanted to be rich. And I really, I didn't have any money and I wasn't interested. But Baruch Hashem, I figured out what it means. Anyway, I hope she has what she was looking for. But anyway, so osher is the highest form of happiness. Aleph Shin Resh. That Shoresh means Yishur, validation, to feel good about myself. Happiness is about feeling valid, feeling good. If I feel good about myself, I don't need anything else in this world. I don't need anything else in this world because I feel good about myself. I can go, I could come, I could stay, I could be alone, I could be with friends, I could be any place, I could weather the storms of life because I feel good about myself. Now, we mentioned the equation of pleasure equals happiness. Nothing could be further from the truth. Because pleasure doesn't make me feel good about myself. In fact, pleasure makes me feel bad about myself. And I'm not just talking about overeating and then suffering the consequences. But it makes me feel bad about myself because I need that. I need that drink. I need that drug. I need that thrill. I need that input. Otherwise, I'm empty. I'm miserable. So it sends the message. It underscores the message. I feel bad about myself. I'm not worth anything. I'm not worthy of anything. I need to come on to outside input and imbibe the outside input in order to get through the day. It's the antithesis of happiness. Happiness is about feeling good about oneself. Now here, as machanchim, we have an opportunity to really inspire and develop happiness in our students. And there are two ways, or there are numerous ways that we could do it. But the goal, if the goal of chinuch is that it should remain, the secondary, the goal under that, or the means to that goal, is making our students happy. Now, happiness has a few very important ingredients. Ingredient number one, if we don't have a purpose, we don't feel happy. Because if I have to feel good about myself, and if I have no purpose in being here, then how in the world could I be happy? There's nothing to feel good about. In fact, most of the world today, thanks to our friend Darwin, is lacking a sense of ever finding a purpose in life. Why? Because the society at large has been convinced, for the most part, that we are a bunch of accidents. That's it. Accidents. Everybody here and everybody out there is an accident. Now, accidents, by definition, have no purpose. They're purposeless acts. We have no purpose. We're here by accident. If we're here by accident and we have no purpose, how can we ever feel good about ourselves? What am I doing? Oh, that's why I need pleasure. It filled the void. I feel miserable. I have no purpose. I'm wasting my life. What am I here for? There's no point in being here. I'm just waiting till I die. Okay, as long as I'm waiting till I die, I might as well fill myself up with all kinds of feelings. You know, temporary feeling. So that's a major, major problem. What do we do? We have to have, and everyone knows that if you walk into a shrink's office and you say, I have no purpose in living, a wise therapist would put you on a suicide watch. Because if you have no purpose in living, then who knows what you might do. We have the opportunity of sharing with our students the fact that we have a purpose in life. Not only do we have a purpose, not only do we have a purpose that's noble, not only do we have a purpose that we have chosen as our purpose, But the manufacturer himself, who is the only one who knows the true purpose of anything that he manufactured, has given us the manual. The Torah that was given to us at Har Sinai, Bifnei Am Vo'Edo, in front of millions of eyewitnesses, is the manual to understand and to fulfill our purpose in life. And we are teaching our students to know that there is a purpose and to understand that purpose. The world, Nebuch, who believes that they're accidents and has no sense of purpose, finished. And not only that, before Darwin came along, a lot of the world didn't know what the purpose was, but they were searching for it. They were going to look. Even if you spend your life looking, if you know that there may be a purpose, you have something to look forward to. But if you've been told that there is no purpose, that you are an accident, it's all over. There's no hope. We not only have hope, we have that purpose. That purpose was revealed to us by the Bnei Yoelim and Har Sinai. And he spoke directly to Moshe Rabbeinu in the earshot of the entire Klal Yisroel Bavur Yishma'om B'dabri Imoch V'gam Becho Yaminu Lo'olam. In order that we know that Moshe Rabbeinu is the official, bona fide, authorized spokesman to teach us every dimension and every aspect of understanding that purpose. We have a purpose. We know our purpose. And our purpose was revealed to us publicly by the manufacturer himself, by the creator. So we know it's real. We know it's true. We know it's the purpose for which we exist. And it was passed down meticulously and accurately through chains of transmission from generation to this very day. Each one of us heard it from their parents and their grandparents and their great-grandparents and their great-great-grandparents. And even if there was a gap in some families, a little bit of people who didn't know very much. But we all go back to the same source. Therefore, we have the ability to give, to share, to educate, to inspire our students with a sense of true purpose in life. That is a key ingredient in happiness. That may be the most important ingredient in happiness, because I have a purpose, or it certainly is the removal of the greatest impediment to happiness, because now that I have a purpose, I don't feel this senseless, meaningless existence. That's one aspect of what we can do. But there's something else we can do too. Do you know, parents are very limited in the impact that they can have on their children. We're beginning to discover that, you know, as parents. Unfortunately, it's a very painful discovery, but we're beginning to discover that. And one of the reasons for the limitation is very interesting. What validates? What validates? Makes you feel good about yourself? Well, love validates. Why? The Sipurnu says that in the Hakdomah to Shir HaShirim that the definition of love is sheyismach ho'oyhev b'malas ha'nehav u'v'hasigoy kol cheftzoy. That the one who loves rejoices in the qualities of the one he loves. It's an appreciation of quality. Love is a declaration of the appreciation of qualities. Why do I love you? Because you're worthy. Because you have good traits. You have good qualities. That's why I love you. And that validates, that makes me feel good about myself. If someone loves me, it gives me that sense of feeling good about myself. The problem is parental love is limited in that it's genetic. It's pre-programmed. That's my job. I'm paid for it. It's expected. It's like my grandmother loves me, shkoyach, you know, like... It's not like today I hear, unfortunately, from too many parents, oh, I love my kid, I just don't like him. But that love is part of the program. Therefore, it can't be as validating. It doesn't make the absolute statement that I'm worthy. I have qualities, and that's why you love me. You love me because we have the same name. You love me because you carried me for so many months. Whatever. Not so a teacher. If a teacher loves a student, if a teacher has that special connection, that relationship with a student, if a teacher cares about a student, if a teacher, forgive me, respects a student, it's a whole different story. That says that I'm choshuv. That makes me feel good about myself. That makes me feel worthy. I must have qualities, otherwise you wouldn't be respecting me. You wouldn't be loving me. You wouldn't be caring about me. You wouldn't be friendly to me. You wouldn't interact with me in that positive way. Therefore, we have the opportunity to validate and uplift and cause happiness in the lives of our students more than parents can. That means we're in a very unique position. And truth be told, if in fact I, the mechaneches, the mechanech, is perceived as the source, as the cause, or as a cause in the happiness of this student, that student will accept what I say, that student will follow my guidance, that student will become an individual who is, I have entered into the umness, that she will be or he will be osid lamud bo. They will continue because this, and you know it's true. Sometimes this teacher had an impact on my whole life. The way this teacher treated, it affected, and I hear it, I feel it, and it reverberates. I'm 50 years old today, and I still remember the way that teacher treated me, and it works the other way too, but let's not discuss that, you know. And so we have that ability. We have the ability to make our students happy, not just by singing and dancing, not just by rewarding them, and not even just by complimenting them, because compliments are a double-edged sword. Sometimes a compliment brings the opposite effect because I feel I have to deny it. I don't feel worthy of it. I think you're just saying it. I didn't really earn it. But when I see the love, when I feel the love, when I feel the respect, when I feel the relationship, it's real. I must be worthy. You made me worthy. I'll do anything you say. You literally, you have your students in the palm of your hand. And you can affect them for life. And I believe that this is the key to what we have to keep in mind as we're working with our students. Now, respect is a very, very important concept as well. Because, you know, many of us in a society where there's so little respect for anybody and anything, we tend sometimes to try to recoup that respect. And sometimes it's at the expense of our students. I was once invited to speak for a school called me up in Beverly Hills, and I should speak there for the teachers and about getting the students to respect the teachers more. I wasn't too interested, that's not exactly my angle, but I asked them what group we're talking about. We're talking about a preschool. Preschool teachers are worried about the kids respecting them, but anyway, Mela. So, but then I told them, I said, I have a very simple formula. If you respect your students, they will respect you. And I heard the phone. They weren't interested in that message. It's a harsh message for some people. It's a harsh message for parents. Respect your children. Respect, yes, respect their feelings. Don't stand up when they walk in the room, but respect their feelings. Respect their ideas, respect their questions, respect their space, respect their time. Respect, that's respect. And when you do that, what you do is you uplift me. I feel good about myself. You have validated me. And with that little respect, not only will you engender respect for the teacher, love and appreciation and friendship and bonding and receptivity will all come because of that respect. Let's talk for a moment about the power of love. Love, relationship, friendship. When Esav was coming with his 400 soldiers to attack Yaakov and his family, it was a very, very strange and worrisome scene. 400 soldiers, that was probably like a super army at that time. Four wives and 11 little children. I don't know what the ages were, but, you know, that's it. Yaakov is afraid. Vayiro Yaakov, the Torah tells us he was concerned. What does he do? He sends a couple of gifts, some animals, to Esav, and he says, a message. My brother, Imlovan Garti, Vahilitzoinu Bokor, and so forth. Veshlach Olim Tzechein, Be'ene Adoni, so forth. A message. The Ralbag says, you learn from here. Rabbi in the Tu Elias on Parshas Vayishlach, He says, you learn from here how to melt the heart of a mortal enemy. Show him friendship. Friendship melts all resistance. I have a question. First of all, he didn't really show him such deep friendship. He's coming with an army. And he has the four little wives and the little kids there, and he's afraid. So he sent them a couple of animals, and he says, I was with love and didn't tell him any great secrets. He didn't share with him anything deep or emotional or meaningful. I was with love and had Tzoynu Bokar and so forth. And so, well, come on. And weiter, Esav's perception of Yaakov was that he was a trickster. Vayakveni zepa mayim. You took from me the pchira. You took from me the brochas. And now you're scared for your life. So you're pretending to be my friend. Here you see how to melt the heart of an enemy. And what enemy? An enemy that Chazal tell us that the hatred of Esav to Yaakov created a chuk hateva halocha hisha Esav seine li Yaakov. How you talking? How could it be? That's going to help. We see from here an amazing thing. Friendship, real friendship, I guess Yaakov was sincere about it, is so powerful that even if the recipient doubts that it's sincere, maybe it is and maybe it's not, but it's there, it can melt the ultimate resistance. We all find resistance in our classroom. Sometimes there's a resistant class, sometimes there are resistant individual students. The love, the respect, the good feelings, the camaraderie, the friendship that we show. Now, that doesn't mean the class is hefker. That doesn't mean the class doesn't have structure. And that doesn't mean the class doesn't have to be obedient and fulfill their roles and their responsibilities. That's true. But on a personal level, there's this sense of caring. The teacher really cares. The teacher really loves. The teacher really respects as an individual. I'll never forget when I came to the Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva many years ago, Rabbi Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg was still the Mashgiach there. And one of the students calls him up Erev Yom Kippur, and he asks him, he says he has fever and he wants to go to shul. Can he wear, and it's supposed to be raining, can he wear shoes? I don't know what he told him, whatever, it's irrelevant. Motzoi Yom Kippur, he gets a call from Rabbi Scheinberg. How you feeling? Is your fever down? Not did you wear the shoes or not, you know. It left an impression for a lifetime. Somebody cares. A phone call at home. A kid is absent for a couple of days. Missed something in a lesson. I saw you weren't paying attention today. Maybe I could help you tonight. Give me a call. Let's spend a few minutes during lunch. Let's make sure that you get it. That extra push, that extra expression of care and concern. That sincere expression of, I care about you. It's a whole different story. In fact, on a school-wide level and on a classroom-wide level, the message has to be that the student is not here to serve the school and the class, but the school and the class and the teacher are here to serve the students. It sounds like words. It sounds very superficial, but it's very real. Those subtle differences make all the difference in making our students feel good about themselves and in therefore becoming the most important person in their lives. I'd like to try to touch on, in the time that we have left, a number of other things. There's a secondary goal in Jewish education, and no less significant, in fact, maybe more primary, but the happiness goal is more critical to accomplish the other goal. And to put that other goal in a very simple sentence, our students must walk away with the conviction that Torah is true and it's good for me and it's going to make me happy and it's going to benefit me in the here and now. You people look a little bit, most of us, too young to remember. But the older generation always used to talk about, oh, in Yeneveltet, Zainazui, good, they would suffer and say, the next world, our kids, and most of us too, have no patience to wait for the next world. If you don't show me why it's good for me in this world, in the here and now, and by the way, your here and now, maybe 5 years, 10 years, their here and now is 5 seconds, remember that. You have to show me why it's good for me now. And unless I know it's good for me now, it's not going to work. Now, and by the way, if you doubt this at the highest level, every day we have to say in Birchas Kriya Shema, Emes, V'yatzi, V'nochon, V'kayom, V'yosher, the Torah is true, and Torah is true, and everything, Kabbalah, Samal Choshmaim, and V'nechmod, V'ohu, V'choviv, V'noim, V'adir, M'sukun, M'kubo, V'toy, V'yofer. We need both. It's true, and it's good. That's the yesod. That has to be the conviction. That has to come out of every lesson, of every interaction, of everything that we teach, of everything that we say. Now, the reason for that is also very, very interesting, but very simple. If I don't know that the Torah is going to make me happy, then you can't convince me that it's real, that it's true. I won't buy it. Because I don't buy things that are going to make me miserable. And on the surface, it's going to make me miserable. Because you are trying to preach to me and connect me to and obligate me to 613 problems. Plus millions of others if they know what goes on in Shulchan Aruch. I can't handle that. That's too much. It's overwhelming. The pressure is enormous. I quit. I want out. Let me out of here. Doesn't work. So what do we have to do? If they have to see that it's going to be good for them, it's going to make you happy. It's going to enhance your quality of life. It's going to give you that which you're looking for in this world, in the here and now. It may not be as instantaneous as some of the other pleasures that they have, but at least it should be in the ballpark. And only that way will they be able to listen, hey, yes, it's true, it's real, it's relevant. This is important, this is significant. Hashem gave the Torah at Har Sinai. Otherwise, it doesn't go in. But on the other hand, if they just realize that it's going to make them happy, that's also not enough. Why? This is wonderful. I love it. Makes me happy. I love this lifestyle. One day I wake up and I say, you know something? This lifestyle is very nice, but maybe there's a lifestyle out there that's even nicer. Let's go looking for it. Off to India. We'll see. Maybe we'll find something. But if they know it's true, and if they know that it's going to be the source of my happiness, I need no more. And that has to be the goal of our education. I remember once they tell a story about one of these seminars where there was a young man and a young woman there, and they had very different perspectives. The young woman said that she would love this lifestyle, but she doesn't believe a word of it. And the young man said he believes that this is really true, but he couldn't live this kind of lifestyle. And the speaker suggested they get married together, and you know, each one will complement the other. But we need both. We must have both. And that has to be the goal of our teaching. I would like to suggest, and only as a suggestion and maybe, you know, something. I'm going to leave it here, and all of this stuff is available on the Priority One website, can be downloaded. I think it should be there. This is a series that we publish. We call it Torah Min HaShemayim. And basically, it's on all the parshios, like a little vart, a little dvar Torah, but it has two kinds. One, to strengthen the belief in the truth of Torah, and one called benefits and belief to give a sense of how it's good for me. And both are very, very critical. Our students have to hear again and again and again and realize it's true and it's good. It's good and it's true. It's good, therefore I want it to be true. It's true, therefore I want to continue this way and follow this goodness because it's the real goodness, it's the true goodness. And I strongly recommend that whatever we could do, maybe giving a Dvar Torah during the week to take home, to say at the table, whatever it might be, I think that's a very important ingredient. One more thing that I would like to leave you with, and then just I'll suggest a few things that we have available, and that is as follows. There's a piece of our education which unfortunately the students who've been through the yeshiva system in the broader sense claim that it has been missing or weak, or education has been soft on this particular claim, on this particular idea. And I think there's no better time, and I heard it mentioned before as I was walking in, there's no better time than Elul to begin to introduce this concept. And that concept is relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Relationship with Hashem. When you talk to most yeshiva graduates and you mention to them the concept of relationship with Hashem, they look at you with a blank stare. Like, what are you talking about? What does that mean? He's there. I'm here. I talk. He keeps quiet. Of course, it's not true. In fact, he answers even before we talk. And he is active in our lives. And if he wasn't answering our tefillahs, we wouldn't be here another moment. But we sort of blur that. We don't. It's very important to be able to focus that. And the truth of the matter is that Shlema HaMelech in Shir HaShirim prophesied and promised us that despite the fact that Hashem is behester upon him, we can't seem to see him as openly as in the times of the Beis HaMikdosh, in the times of the Nevi'im. And despite the fact that if you'll ask most Jews, they'll tell you, I don't know, I believe, I don't care, I'm whatever. The Hester upon him is Behester upon him, but he's peeking in Mashkiach min achaloinos, Meitzitz min acharakim. He is supervising and taking care of every detail of our lives. You just have to look for it in his Hashkocha Protis a little better. And by the way, if kids don't understand what Hashkocha Protis is, take them for a ride in your car and use Waze. Mamish, perfect dogma. Some Israeli, I guess, I don't know, knows where I am, where I have to go, the best way to get there, and what time I'm going to arrive. And it changes in the middle if there happens to be something going on. Not only that, he warns me about police and cameras and everything else, you know. He makes mistakes too, that's not the same, but that's besides the point. Yes? Can I just finish, and then we'll take a few minutes of questions, all right? Let me just, because I'm almost finished, okay? So anyway, so very, 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 very important that you try to introduce them as much as possible. Hashem is involved in our lives. There is Hashkocha Protis. Hashem deals with every single detail of every one of us. And realizing that, and we, a guy once walked into my office not too long ago and says, I'm an apikoros. I don't believe in anything. I'm an atheist. I said, oh, Shalom Aleichem, please sit down. I never met an atheist before. There's no such thing. Everybody, every Jew knows deep down what's going on. It's just buried. And help them to unravel it, to bring it forth, and let them know that Hashem, even though we can't see him, he's Mashkiach min achaloinos, he's Meitzitz min acharakim, just like the ways people are doing to us. Same thing. He's the same thing. No comparison, but, you know, just a dogma. Anyway, that's one thing. I'd just like to share one more little story with you, because something personal. In my own life, in my own children, I think that this one episode made a major reshim on all their lives. We were living at the time in Los Angeles, and, the profession of Jewish education, if you'll call it that, is not always the most lucrative. My daughter was maybe 7, 8 years old. She was going to a day camp, and they were going on a trip that day in the heat of the California, Los Angeles summer. And she asked me for 75 cents to buy a soda. I didn't have 75 cents. I said, I don't have. She says, what should I do? I says, say Tehillim. Wonderful fatherly advice. She sits down with her younger sister. She wasn't too happy with the advice. She sits down with her younger sister, and she starts to say Tehillim. And she says, it's 10:30 at night. I have to leave the house at 7:30 in the morning. Like, what's going to happen? I don't have the 75 cents. Where? What? The little kid who was like four years old, maybe someone's going to give it to you. Maybe I don't want some nonsense. Okay, fine. She left without it. She comes home that evening, all smiles. What happened? A friend of hers, who at the Purim Carnival, 5 months earlier, borrowed 75 cents and never returned it, woke up that morning and said, I owe the Cohen girl 75 cents. I forgot I never returned it. And she brought it to camp to give it back. Hashem is involved with every aspect of our lives. We just have to open our eyes. And if you can get your students to open their eyes, we have to open our eyes too. But if you can get your students to open their eyes, you'll introduce them to a world that has the potential to have a wonderful, ongoing relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, I'd like just to add one more thing, because I understand that it is a theme that you're going to be dealing with the entire year. You know, one of the things we mentioned that we want to show our students is that the Torah is good. And part of that goodness is how superior it is to any other lifestyle, to any other religious directives, to any other philosophy that's out there. And one of the most amazing halachas in Torah is the Hilchos Lashon Hara. Not only its complexity, which can drive a person nuts, but something else. The extent to which the Torah went to prevent us from speaking Lashon Hara, from speaking bad about someone else. Not only is there a lav that forbids it, loiselech rochil, not only is there a novel of Losi Soshe Mashov that the Chofetz Chaim brings, not only are there other lavin and asay that you're mevatel, but two of them are very, very interesting. The Torah said not only you can't speak Lashon Hara, the Torah said not only you can't accept, you can't listen to Lashon Hara, you can't believe Lashon Hara. No, but more than that. Two mitzvahs, timidiyos, zochores asherosa Hashem alekecha lemiryom. Remember Maaseh Miriam. Miriam spoke Lashon Hara and she was punished. 7 days the Klal Yisrael had to wait and they couldn't travel in the Midbar because she was Michutz LaMachaneh. And every day they would ask, "Nu, when are we moving?" Oh, Miriam spoke Lashon Hara. There she's out there. We have to wait another day, another 2 days. Zohar, Tmidis, always. And he shomer minega hatzoras. Since tzoras comes as a result of Lashon Hara, therefore guard yourself. He shomer, tmidi, all the time. The Torah not only wanted we shouldn't speak Lashon Hara. The Torah not only wanted we shouldn't listen to Lashon Hara. The Torah not only wanted we shouldn't believe Lashon Hara. But we have to have two mitzvahs that are constant. Always remember, always have it at the tip of your conscious or subconscious memory. Miriam, 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 remember Miriam. Remember what happens if you speak Lashon Hara. He shomer negatzaras. He shomer negatzaras. I don't want to make you nervous or neurotic or anything, but that's it. Such a hakboda. You don't find that any place. Maybe if a slander, you'll have a multi-million dollar case in court, and usually they get off with who knows what. But this is the beauty of our Torah. Showing the beauty, showing the sensitivity, showing the uniqueness, showing the human perfection. And there's another angle to human perfection. If we have a system for human perfection, we have a system for validation. As I become better, as I become more godly, I begin to feel better about myself, and I am more happy. And if everybody is going to be happy, then we have created a chinuch that's osid lamu behem. Thank you very much. Do we have a...
I think we have to get time.
Okay.